But need alone is not enough to set power free. There must be knowledge. The fog was thinning now under the heat of the sun that shone bare above on the peak in a bright sky. As the mists moved and parted in great drifts and smoky wisps, the villagers saw a band of warriors coming up the mountain. They were armored with bronze helmets and greaves and breastplates of heavy leather and shields of wood and bronze, and armed with swords and the long Kargish lance. Winding up along the steep bank of the Ar they came in a plumed, clanking, straggling line, near enough already that their white faces could be seen and the words of their jargon heard as they shouted to one another. In this band of the invading horde there were about 100 men, which is not many, but in the village were only 18 men and boys. Now need called knowledge out. Dooney, seeing the fog blow and thin across the path before the Kargs, saw a spell that might avail him. An old weather worker of the Vale, seeking to win the boy as apprentice, had taught him several charms, and one of these tricks was called fog weaving, a binding spell that gathers the mists for a while in one place, and with it one skilled in illusion can shape the mist into fair ghostly seemings, which last a little and fade away. The boy had no such skill, but his intent was different, and he had the strength to turn the spell to his own ends. Rapidly and aloud, he named the places and the boundaries of the village, and then spoke the fog-weaving charm, but in among its words he enlaced the words of a spell of concealment, and last he cried the word that set the magic going. Even as he did so, his father, coming up behind him, struck him hard on the side of the head, knocking him right down. "Be still, fool. Keep your blathering mouth shut and hide if you can't fight." Dooney got to his feet. He could hear the Kargs now at the end of the village, as near as the great yew tree by the tanner's yard. Their voices were clear in the clink and creak of their harness and arms, but they could not be seen. The fog had closed and thickened all over the village, graying the light, blurring the world till a man could hardly see his own hands before him. "I've hidden us all," Dooney said sullenly, for his head hurt from his father's blow, and the working of the double incantation had drained his strength. "I'll keep up this fog as long as I can. Get the others to lead them up to Highfall." The smith stared at his son, who stood wraith-like in that weird, dank mist. It took him a minute to see Dooney's meaning, but when he did, he ran at once, noiselessly knowing every fence and corner of the village, to find the others and tell them what to do. And now, through the gray fog, bloomed a blur of red as the Kargs set fire to the thatch of a house. Still, they did not come up into the village, but waited at the lower end till the mist should lift and lay bare their loot and prey. The tanner, whose house it was that burned, sent a couple of boys skipping right under the Kargs' noses, taunting and yelling and vanishing again like smoke into smoke. Meantime, the older men, creeping behind fences and running from house to house, came close on the other side and sent a volley of arrows and spears at the warriors, who stood all in a bunch. One Karg fell writhing with a spear still warm from its forging right through his body. Others were arrow-bitten, and all enraged. They charged forward then to hew down their puny attackers, but they found only the fog about them, full of voices. They followed the voices, stabbing ahead into the mist with their great, plumed, blood-stained lances. Up the length of the street they came, shouting, and never knew they had run right through the village as the empty huts and houses loomed and disappeared again in the writhing gray fog. The villagers ran scattering, most of them keeping well ahead since they knew the ground, but some boys or old men were slow. And the Kargs, stumbling on them, drove their lances or hacked with their swords, yelling their war cry, the names of the white godbrothers of Atuan. Willowa Atwa! Some of the band stopped when they felt the land grow rough underfoot, but others pressed right on, seeking the phantom village, following dim, wavering shapes that fled just out of reach before them. And all the mist had come alive with these fleeting forms, dodging, flickering, fading on every side. One group of the Kargs chased the wraiths straight to the high fall, the cliff's edge above the springs of Ar, and the shapes they pursued ran out onto the air, and there vanished in a thinning of the mist, while the pursuers fell, screaming through fog and sudden sunlight 100 feet sheer to the shallow pools among the rocks. And those that came behind and did not fall stood at the cliff's edge, listening. Now dread came into the Kharg's hearts, and they began to seek one another, not the villagers in the uncanny mist. They gathered on the hillside, and yet always there were wraiths and ghost shapes among them, and other shapes that ran and stabbed from behind with spear or knife and vanished again. The Kharg's began to run, all of them, downhill, stumbling, silent, until all at once they ran out from the gray blind mist and saw the river and the ravines below the village all bare and bright in morning sunlight. And then they stopped, gathering together, and looked back. A wall of wavering, writhing gray lay blank across the path, hiding all that lay behind it. Out from it burst two or three stragglers, lunging and stumbling along, their long lances rocking on their shoulders. Not one Kharg looked back more than that once. All went down in haste away from the enchanted place. Farther down the northward vale, those warriors got their fill of fighting. The towns of the East Forest from Ovark to the coast had gathered their men and sent them against the invaders of Gaunt. Band after band they came down from the hills, and that day and the next the Kharg's were harried back down to the beaches above Eastport, where they found their ships burnt. So they fought with their backs to the sea till every man of them was killed. The sands of Armouth were brown with blood until the tide came in. But on that morning, in Ten Alders, village and up on the high fall, the dank gray fog had clung a while, and then suddenly it blew and drifted and melted away. This man and that stood up in the windy brightness of the morning and looked about him, wondering. Here lay a dead Kharg with yellow hair, long, loose, and bloody. There lay the village tanner, killed in battle, like a king. Down in the village, the house that had been set afire still blazed. They ran to put the fire out, since their battle had been won. In the street, near the great yew, they found Duni, the bronzesmith's son, standing by himself, bearing no hurt, but speechless and stupid, like one stunned. Oh, they were well aware of what he had done, and they led him into his father's house and went calling for the witch to come down out of her cave and heal the lad who had saved their lives and their property, all but four who were killed by the Kharg's and the one house that was burnt. No weapon hurt had come to the boy, but he would not speak, nor eat, nor sleep. He seemed not to hear what was said to him, not to see those who came to see him. There was none in those parts wizard enough to cure what ailed him. His aunt said, "He has overspent his power," but she had no art to help him.